avoid any, since we're not a criminal procedure revision here, I'd probably feel even more comfortable just simply using the term reasonable cause. Let the courts continue to interpret reasonable cause to be probable cause, just not to rock the boat. So I guess what I'm saying is leave reasonable cause alone on line 12, and then on line 15 and 16, just put reasonable cause, which will mean probable cause. But
why do you think that assault in the third degree?
Well, that's the misdemeanor assault. That's the misdemeanor form of assault. But let me, the question that came up was, well, what does this do in terms of authorizing peace officers to go into your dwelling to make the arrest? And I think in order to consider this, you got to consider a number of hypotheticals. First hypothetical is a situation where the peace officer is called to the dwelling, say, by the wife. He enters with consent. Husband is there, wife is there. Wife is obviously been beaten very recently. At that time, he has probable cause to make the arrest, and he does not have to, and while it's never been decided by our court, it's very probable the court would hold that there is no need to leave the house, get a warrant to make the arrest, simply because there are exigent circumstances. If you leave the husband there with the wife, it's possible that the victim will be destroyed. It's protected evidence, simply. So in that situation, the officer who is lawfully on the premises should make the arrest without going for the warrant. Let's give another hypothetical. Officer is down in the bar. Someone goes up to him and says, "Hey, Joe is beating up Mary." The officer goes up to the house, knocks on the door. Mary and Joe say, "Don't come in." He can't come in. If he wants to try to get an arrest warrant, he may go to the magistrate, tell him the facts he has learned, and the facts being that he learned in a bar that Joe is beating up Mary. He may try to get a warrant, and the judge is going to determine, the magistrate will determine whether there's reasonable cause and probably find that there isn't. Another example being, the officer's down in the bar, he hears Joe is beating up Mary. He goes up to Joe's place, knocks on the door. Joe comes to the door, and Joe says, "Go away, we don't need you." He says, "Well, can I speak to your wife, please?" And, then you get into a trickier situation there. If Mary doesn't come to the door, or he hears Mary whimpering, it's going to be depending on, whether it's an emergency or not. And then it becomes, the officer's judgment. If there's some type of emergency situation, he thinks there's an emergency, he may go in. If he doesn't, he wants to be safer, he may simply go to the magistrate and obtain a warrant. But I personally, you've got to look at these on a case-by-case basis. The important thing is, does he have probable cause to make the arrest? He can determine that in the situations where it clearly is probable cause, or if he wants to get on the safer side, he may go to the magistrate.
And, you're proposing this to replace all of that 12-hour cooling-off
area
and all that?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, go ahead. What's the difference between sub-2 and sub-3?
Well,
sub-2 is when the person is committed a felony.
Bill, there's no reason at all to include that. That's existing law. That's not new or anything. It's just existing law. The only thing we're adding is two existing laws, B and C. And in the bill, you would probably not even... The only reason I had that there was because I changed reasonable cause to probable cause. But, okay.
If there's no reason to be there, number one, there is a reason. But it seems like... Sub-2 says when a person is committed a felony, all they have is present. And sub-3 says when a felony has been committed. It says the same thing, only in... transposed language. Under sub-2, the person making the arrest has to have reasonable cause to believe, doesn't he? Under sub-2, then they have to have a reasonable cause?
There's not, no, it doesn't say that.
So that he can just shuffle, cut, and deal, and if I want to go arrest Lisa, I can just go arrest Lisa?
Bill, I think that's what it says. I haven't read all the court decisions on it, but I want to point out that, again, the amendment, the thing that we're talking about, spouse abuse, has nothing at all to do with subsections A through 3. I think if you want to give that serious attention, it's the subject of, a revision to that, and I don't think that that is incident to the criminal code revision. I mean, I agree.
What did you say?
Okay.
You said this is Title 12.
This is Title 12, and the only reason you have the statute before you is because we're going to add B and C to it. And B and C have nothing at all to do with A, other than they're necessary because A would not cover it. It's beyond.
Thank you.
There's a lot of things that need revision in the type of code of criminal procedure.
You don't think we should get into that?
I don't think so.
No, I'm just asking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, into revising the first sections.
Well, the question is, when do we stop?
Okay. Then, Mr. Chairman, I would ask the question, Barry, if we continue to use the term reasonable cause in line 12, should we also use it in the new edition?
Yeah, I thought I made that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I would, yeah, go back to reasonable cause and tell it to them.
Okay.
How many instances have there been of people, private people making no arrests?
Private people?
Citizens.
Not very many.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, how the heck would...
That's how they do it. That's how they do it in Lafayette.
The police officer said that if you place them under arrest, how they can be able to get under arrest.
Well, that is the question.
That's been done many times.
Because he can't, because the police officer can't do it.
That's
one of the problems.
But of course, in every case, you're going to see the man's going to turn around and say, I place you under arrest too, but they're both blue. You know, they're one way. It takes two bites. So not all cases. He's going to arrest both of them. Because they're going to both be fighting. Most girls don't just sit down and let you beat them up. They're going to be fighting both of them. They're going to be assaulting one another. And I know that. Not you, but he's going to arrest both of them. Okay. I very seldom have ever gone and I've been in a thousand of them. And hypothetically, these people we're talking about here, this little girl is so helpless that can't do anything. She's scared to death to walk out of the house with a police officer. It does occur. You know, I wouldn't say that.
But only in the presence of a police officer you're talking about. I'm talking about Joe Sixpack going down and arresting somebody without, you know, the man, Mr. Lawson.
That's what I feel like you were getting at, and I don't think that occurs very often.
And number two, a private person, how would he know what a felony is and what isn't a felony?
Again, the thing is, though, is your comments are not going to... It's not going to the issue of... What's in the criminal code?
Well, I guess I'm uncomfortable with a private person being given the authority to go arrest somebody.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
That's existing law.
You gotta have it. That's the only way I got that party quieted down in my neighborhood.
We used to deal with shoplifters all the time.
Yeah.
I think you have to remember the police have no authority to arrest that a citizen doesn't have. That's the only thing they're ready to transport him with a warrant.
Let's get back to that. The only thing we're considering is whether we want to amend B and C on the existing law, which is A.
Yes.
I'm removing
that. I want to ask a question or two.
Hey, Mr. Dane.
On number C.
Yes.
Well, how long do you have to live with a girl to have a household?
Well, it says it's social.
If you back up and they get in a fight, is it a place of going to rest?
I think that the using the word social unit implies something more than someone staying over for a weekend. But I would say that it would encompass a situation where I was living with someone for a few months. Yeah, it would. And again, it's the situation where he has probable cause to believe a misdemeanor has been committed.
Then I have to ask these a question. Maybe you know the answer, but you don't know the answer. What's the argument here for a girl that has no legal commitment or anything, just living with a guy, and why she can't leave with a police officer if he beats up or something? Does she need the same protection? Just because she's living with a guy for a few months, that the mother and the people we generally hear are trying to talk about. Are we giving this police officer more authority? God, he can almost go into anybody's place and arrest them. What's hacking up going on? You know, then you can take a stick at it. And all we can do is go in and make an arrest because somebody said that they got hit or something. And they said, this is my house, we're living together. And there's a big brawl over there. They're half drunk and doped up. And they said, I want so-and-so arrested at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, of course,
the
first thing you have to remember is that he has to have reasonable cause. I mean, he has, which probably, I would think, means some kind of physical evidence. Somebody has to be bleeding or black eyed or something.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that we come back to the fact that no matter what the relationship, whether it's married or not married, if he has reasonable cause, a crime has been committed. And I don't think we should make a distinction between the crime, between crimes, depending on the relationship between the people, if you understand what I mean.
Yes.
If he has reasonable cause to believe that a crime has been committed.
And it doesn't require, this thing is, this section does not require that the officer make the arrest. It simply gives him the authority to say, hey, look, man, I want you to leave now, you know, go out, cool off your heels. If you don't leave, I'm going to arrest you. It gives him the authority to do that, and that's why you don't need, you know, failure to leave a dwelling upon the reasonable command of an officer. Because you can give that, you know, he'd basically say, hey, look.
I think Ed's point is that we're extending the law to protect these battered wives. Now, do we need to extend it to cover battered girlfriends?
Yeah, I think we should. I mean, I think we should. We're not, no, we are thinking.
I think Ed's question is, do we need to? I mean, do we have all these battered girlfriends? We know we got these battered wives.
I think so too. If we're limited to a household, if we're going to go out and pick up people that are not, I'm looking after it, and I think you are. The lady that's got a big concussion that just pounded the thunder out of her, you know, and she's got three kids in the bedroom, and she can't leave. I'm not too sympathetic, quite frankly, to two people that are just out there having a good time, and one gets mad and gets a fight, and one puts the other one in jail. I'm just not happy about that. But if we extend the authority for police to arrest on misdemeanors without on probable cause, and we extend it beyond, and even here I question whether we should even do it this way, but if we extend it beyond the household, and we start picking up these other things that girls might get involved in, I think you're going too far and letting police go out and make arrests on misdemeanors, not concerned.
But would you like it to be limited to the spouses?
Well, I think probably our original intent, if I read this, and I'm not even pleased with this, because I think it has some real constitutional measures in letting police have too much to say about who gets arrested when we're there on these things, but I would do all that. But if you go beyond that, I think probably like we did with drunk drivers, here's a guy, he's got probable cause, he's sitting behind the wheel and everything, maybe that's one thing, but you're trying to get a drunk driver, but we're trying to get it's a housewife that's being beaten up.
Yeah, is it, you know, your point is correct in the sense that this was the original reason for having this was because of spouse abuse. Now, in drafting the failure to comply with an order to leave a dwelling, I mean, the thought was simply being that that explosive situation could occur, you know, with all people living together in the same dwelling. But to get at Ed's concern on line 17, you could simply say, has committed third degree assault against his spouse. Period.
Lisa? Well, I don't think we should limit it to spouses because a lot of violence occurs in households. For instance, we might be talking here about child abuse as well as spouse abuse.
That's correct.
Or we might be talking, it's hard, Ed, just to say women who are living with a guy. Well, it could be. It's impossible to dream up all the hypothetical circumstances, but it could be a woman who has three children, but who has moved in with a guy, or he's moved in with her. So she has children, they're not his children. Maybe he's beating up those kids, or he's beating up this woman. She's no more capable of leaving than she would be if she were his wife. And yet, she's not protected. Or it could be a woman beating up a man. This happens too. And he's not capable of leaving for one reason or another. It's, I just really feel as though we'd be doing injustice to people if we limited it only to spouses, because, and I keep coming back to this, what we're trying to do is deal with household violence, and it really doesn't matter to me. It matters maybe in the eyes of the law, but it doesn't matter to me whether those people have a legal relationship or not. It matters to me if violence is taking place in the house, whatever the nature of it.
You need to get on with the show. We have considered this issue.
Is there a motion?
Yeah. Well, the motion to adopt this amendment, which would be include B and C, and B would be amended to say reasonable cause.
Wait a minute. They don't have probable cause.
Well,
it's changed to reasonable cause.
Because that's what's used in the existing statute, reasonable cause, not probable. No, we've changed that too. We're going back to the original plan.
Okay. Question.
I don't like to see.
All right, the amendment beta, of course. All those in favor of the amendment, raise the right hand. All those opposed, say so. Okay, it's what you get. Is that some good copy?
I left that, they got the copy room locked now, even.
Yeah.
What's going on around here?
Hey, let's call the...
I'll call Chuck Sanchez.
Call the sergeant there.
No, I got
it.
The chambers are locked.
I had
a key
there. You have a key in the chambers? I should be at one.
It's open. No, I'll be here for sure.
Who did you get it from?
I've been here 10 years to get one. You know.
Oh, Dick, I've got a long way to go. Yes, sir.
Let me make a prediction for you so you remember this.
Okay.
And, that law is going to put more women in jail than mothers in jail than even men.
Okay, we're on amendment.
Gamma.
Alpha, beta, gamma.
Gamma. Bob knows it too.
Gamma, see?
We're going to ruin something today.
Okay, Terry, this is on the attributing statute. It was pointed out.
What's this?
Well, this is for the contributing statute. It was pointed out, I believe, by Fred that as drafted it was. I mean, it was simply wrong as drafted, because we say that it's a crime to aid a child under 18 to do any act, in fact, prohibited by state law, to make it a misdemeanor. And then if you look, we've got a statute saying it is a B misdemeanor to give minors cigarettes. Okay, separate provision saying it's a B misdemeanor. Well, this provision makes it an A misdemeanor to do it. So it doesn't make sense. If you're going to have an A misdemeanor for contributing, it should be on a crime that's at least a felony. So. Well, think about what the statute says.
If you give a kid cigarettes,
yep.
Then it's a B misdemeanor.
Yep.
But what if you aid or encourage a kid to do something else that's less for imprisonment of less than 1 year, then you go scot-free?
No, then you go under the specific statute.
Under the specific statute. But what if you aid a kid to do something that isn't specified in the statute, like drunk driving or something like that, and the imprisonment isn't for more than 1 year, then...
Yeah, I do understand, but the thing is, you would go under the statute as an accomplice, I believe.
What would you do if you get under the law of Lisa's statute? I know they arrested great many guys on a 16-year-old girl runs away from home.
Yes.
And 2 21-year-old guys hold her in a cab, you know, they let her stay in their trailer.
Yes.
For a week, and her parents are out looking for her and everything, but she stayed there. You can't prove whether they had intercourse or not. You can't get all these other things, but we've charged those people with committing delinquency of a minor by letting her stay in that trailer and keeping her hid from her guardian. It's not punishable by a year. How are we going to address that guy that hides kids?
But you have a statute prohibiting that now.
What does it call?
Well, do you? Because the
statute... Well, statu- we use contributing to the matter if you were to take a kid runaway and have them in their home or help them escape their parents or...
Right, but the contributing statute is addressed. It requires that the act in fact be prohibited by state law.
Yeah, but is there a state law?
I don't know.
Well, then the one we just got to change to a year, that's the one they were using when... Or, of course, that just says, the one you have here says, this is a violation of law. If you contribute to someone to break the law, which is running away from home.
Right, well, that's what it's saying, but there happened to be a...
It's not a statute.
But they're juvenile.
But to hide a child, which a lot of these people go to, and a lot of girls take off and go there to some older guy's house, and they keep them there for a week, and they sneak them out and have parties. I know they used to arrest them for contributing or taking a girl to an X-rated movie or something like that, and go to the mother's side, girl's side, and they don't think these guys should have taken them. 14-year-olds outside.
Yeah.
But hiding kids out just happened to come to mind. There must be others that you can entice a kid will do.
The thing is,
not a year.
The thing is, the commission came very close to not even having a contributing statute, and the reason being is that you should have specific provisions covering it. The our existing contributing statute, though it's never been specifically attacked, is probably, you know, a lot of its provisions are unconstitutional. Because they're very vague about what is in violation. Hence, the commission said it had to be in violation of state law. But
see, the contributing statute of the old one was broken into either you could go either misdemeanor or unfollowed. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how this worked.
Yeah, by threat.
Two ways you can charge it with
it's a good law, I think. You know, I don't know if it's vague or not, but it's, the law is, it was used, it has been used well. It's been used in situations where sexual penetration or sexual contact or lewdness activities. And I haven't seen that it's been abused.
Well, you don't do anything, so you don't have to do anything with the child. You can do something in his presence, like a guy that takes a bunch of boys, take a girl out of the car, and they've got booze and everything, they're drinking, or maybe an illegal narcotic or something, and they're all using it, or they all take their clothes off in front of her or something. Of course, you can join them. But they do a lot of this stuff, and they don't ask her to do anything. She's not involved with it. But you actually can produce your ability to see so they say.
I haven't seen a lot of abuse. I mean, there's some laws that people abuse by prosecutors, but I haven't seen that. In fact, it's used a lot of times when the sort of a delicate situation is with the child or with the woman, rather than to prosecute the young woman, rather than to prosecute rape or attempted rape or something like that, is when she's being prosecuted.
See, this is the history. That's right, they used it where they all the brain weren't there, but yet, even though she's not a consenter,
so what's easier to prosecute these tests for rape?
Lisa, I've never seen it.
What about adding language, something to the effect that you encourage a child 18 years of age to do any act of fact prohibited by state law and for which there is no specific prohibition for kids under 18, something like that? Is the cigarette the only one?
That's the only one we have in the criminal code.
Maybe we should just, what I'd prefer to do is repeal that and just leave it.
Well, if you repeal it, then it wouldn't be prohibited by state law.
No.
See, the committee...
Change the classification.
The problem is, the thing is that you've got specific acts that you don't want people doing with children. You specifically prohibit them. And if you specifically prohibit them, well, why do you need a contributing statute?
I guess I'm new in this area, but you need it because those kids can't be held completely responsible for their acting and doing those things. But if they were induced, I think we ought to be able to get them.
Right, and then you treat them under the specific statute which prohibits a person from doing that with the child.
You mean we ought to write an ad to every crime that you can't do this, you can't induce a child to do this?
Well,
what do you think?
Well, I see your point. I mean, the thing is that this is a very tough. I mean, the recommendations have been, you know, in terms of revised statutes, to not even have a contributing statute. In fact, a lot of them don't.
Well,
because
if you didn't, then
here's the alternative. First of all, you've got state and local ordinances that prohibit adults from doing certain things with minors. And in fact, the local ordinances on this are much more specific about than the state ordinances. And that's why the committee said prohibited by state law, and they intended to mean state. They didn't intend to include municipalities. So you leave it up to the municipalities to specifically cover it. Okay, then, say you've got a situation where Ed was talking about, sexual penetration or something like that, and you just simply treat it under this...
That's covered under what we're
under just general
to.
Provisions.
Yeah, but what if you induce a kid to go rob the bank?
Well, then you treat it as an accomplice. Then we've got him covered because that specific section we added said you solicit an innocent agent essentially to do the act, and an innocent agent would be a person who would not be guilty of the offense, which would be the child.
This covers all crimes.
All crimes. That's correct.
Well,
see, so
you do though, very if you advise 13-year-old
yes.
girl to.
Well,
not popping booze or anything else, or you take her into a bar that you know about that she's too young to go in. But particularly over the party, or you get her involved in some conduct, even though you don't do anything to her or anything, but you know that her being there is not, it's illegal for her.
You deal with that in a specific, you deal with that in a specific statute. You deal with it in the drug statute, you know, you have a provision in there that says you can't have a child on the, you know, any premises where drug activity is occurring. I don't know whether the bill that you propose has that. I don't know whether existing law does or not. But, I mean, that's how you would deal with it. The thing is, it's very vague. To try and get all these areas, you know, unless you specifically prohibit them, it's very difficult, you know, contributing to delinquency. Okay, that's a very nice phrase. And if it was 1870, we could get away with it in terms of saying it's unlawful to contribute to the delinquency of a child. But you won't be able to get away with it now.
I thought that about lewd and lascivious, too.
Well, our court has said stuff about...
The court upheld lewd and lascivious.
That's correct.
That's, there's anything that's vague, lewd, and lascivious.
Well, I don't necessarily, I think I probably agree with the court in the lewd and lascivious statute, but our court has already looked at our contributing statute and basically, and you know, said that the words that we use now, people think about this. In our contributing statute, it says, a person who commits any acts or omits the performance of any duty which causes or tends to cause, encourages or contributes to the delinquency of a minor is guilty of a misdemeanor. Well, the word tend to cause is clearly, that's bad. Okay, but then the thing is, how do they define delinquency? Okay, delinquency, there are 13 ways to define delinquency.
Present law.
This is the railroad track.
The first one is violating the law of the United States, or the state, or an ordinance of any city or town. Well, why do you need that? I mean, why do you need the contributing statute in addition if you've got a specific law on it? Secondly, is incorrigible either at home or in school? I don't know if that would fall under. Knowingly associates with thieves, vicious or immoral persons, without just excuse and without the consent of his parent or custodian, absence himself from home or his place of abode, is danger of becoming a person who leads an idle, dissolute, lewd, or immoral life.
Anything
here
about
motivational
sentiment?
No, but I mean, officially walk wonders around railroad yards and tracks.
It's
a tough area.
Well, that needs to be cleaned up.
But there's still a contributing deal where it's not covered where a bunch of adults are doing something in front of a child.
That's not a crime. Is that what you're talking about?
It's not a crime. And I think it shouldn't be contributing. If you're doing something, if you're having intercourse and there's a little 10-year-old girl in the room, it's not your joke.
I can't remember the original proposal that had that stuff. Addresses that situation.
Yeah.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, it seems, tell me if I'm off the track, but it seems to me we've got two issues. One is whether we should have this special section on contributing, and in fact, there is a section on accomplice that I'm willing to accept various terms covered in that kind of situation. The other question is, should we have some kind of contributing statute that deals with areas that are not against state law? Is that correct?
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
I believe that is correct.
And if you're going to do that, you have to go to something that's very general.
Mr. Chairman, I prosecute and defend the contributing cases. And like I said, I don't understand the views very much, but I think it is a valuable law that should be up to the police and prosecute a tool that they should have. It's not used very often, but the situation that I've seen in cases where there's a couple of, see this up around Fairbanks and Anchorage a lot where you got a lot of military guys. The military guys pick up a high school girl or something after school, and they're out. Maybe they even haven't gotten her to drink yet, you know. Maybe they got a bunch of drugs in their car, and a policeman or a parent sees it, and they get the car stopped. Now, the guy hasn't committed a crime yet, but everybody in the courtroom knows when the guy comes in there that, you know, that was the first step to the next thing, okay? So, contributing is as misdemeanor contributing is what it is. And it's used sparingly, but it's used effectively, and I think the committee should consider that is a valuable tool.
Doug, the thing is that originally when we considered like the first or second review, we had a specific contributing statute. There were two approaches. One was to do the approach we adopted, and the other one was to prohibit specific acts. And what we said, a person commits a crime contributing if he knowingly, one, sells or causes to be sold alcohol or tobacco in any form to a minor. Two, induces, causes, or permits a minor to participate in gambling as defined in. Three, permits the minor to enter or remain in a place where unlawful controlled substances activity is maintained or conducted. Four, induces, causes, or permits an unmarried person under 16 to witness or engage in an act of sexual penetration or sexual conduct. Well, the engaging in, we somewhat covered already, but that's it. We've got four specific acts. That's the type of conduct Oregon adopted. Now, what you may wish to do is combine the general provision that I just recommended with the amendment plus the four specific acts. And I can work on it and bring it back to you, on Tuesday or so.
Well, I think Barry's talked me out of this section entirely. If it's truly covered under a compass, then we don't need this.
Not everything.
Is the other thing, the cases that Doug and Ed just talked about are not covered by a compass. You're going to have a vague general statute that,
you might be able to get it.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. We don't need this.
Yeah, but if they didn't do any act, if you take them to a party, you can't get them anything.
Or if I take a little
15-year-old
or 16-year-old girl to the next
race movie.
Well,
I think it's obvious the committee wants to include that kind of activity, so let's...
I'll bring it.
Rather than...
I'll tell you, another thing is, another way it's used, where the felony contributing is used sometimes is a lesser included offense of statutory rape. That is a good idea.
Let me,
a lot of times you got
let me ask some questions then to make sure that this is going to be good. Now, what it says is, you know, we do have a template solicitation to cover a lot of acts. Right, but we don't have some of these other cases. Now, this one has one on alcohol, tobacco, gambling, remain in a place where unlawful controlled substances, which can be your drugs. In other words, you can't take somebody into a pub, whatever it is. Okay, and then also induces, causes, and commits an unmarried person under 16 to witness or engage in an act of sexual abuse. In other words, if they're at.
Well, so what do you do with your parents?
The parents who do that?
Yeah, what do you do? Right.
Well, I think it's
well, that's it. I think that's the way that they've ever had the process. But, okay, so now is that going to cover the kinds of things that people want to cover? Is there something else
in the area that I was thinking?
Well, I mean, I think there's a limit. We don't want to end up with a ridiculous statute like we have now. We have railroad tracks. Immoral life. Well, if you allow somebody to wander around railroad tracks, that's contributing to delinquency in mind. And so I think that...
Isn't there some specific intent
involved? No, any act which tends to cause the person to become a delinquent.
No, the current law, isn't there specific intent law? You have to intend to...
No.
You don't have to intend to do it?
No.
Well, then you can't.
I mean, how many of us were delinquent when we were kids?
For the felon, you didn't have to.
Oh, what's a felony mean?
Okay. All right, the question is there anything else that you want to cover? I just want to make sure that the answer is
right.
We're not going to be able to bring this back three or four more times.
Yeah.
You were delinquent, and I was smoking.
Yeah, okay. Let's amend the gamma is the second. Next one.
Yeah. Terry, I've got the classification issues. Terry, I've got some classification issues.
Do
you want to
discuss that? Let's classify.
Well,
I thought we were going to wait till Monday.
We got 2 minutes to do
where I was kind of back in stock and I would call my
We're all getting old, that's why.
Everybody's Danny, huh?
My birthday's coming up late.
Okay,
Terry, this is a bunch of the classification issues that we've drenched up as we've gone along, that we didn't need to get done with this today. These are classification changes that different members have brought up, or various brought up as we've gone along.
Terry, what this doesn't include is Mr. Dickey has proposed a lot of the reduced sentencing. He's going to recommend some changes, but this doesn't include it. First one is on page 50 on lawful imprisonment. Terry, you mentioned that you thought that was misclassified. That it should be a misdemeanor.
Mr. Chairman, okay, I want to commend Mr. Stern for picking up on all these comments that we make and bringing them back to us later. I just need to super much having you really listen to what we're saying and, you know, follow up on it. I really appreciate it.
I actually listened to some of them.
How do you do it?
Tell us how you do it.
Finally listen to some of it.
You finally wait in the back of your mind, you make notes or what?
I'll tell you what he does. It's very interesting. He's listening to you when he's writing.
Look at
the same
that.
Time. He writes while he's looking at somebody else.
Did you ever see Barry going like...
Yeah, that's right. That's
badly,
what he does.
Right? I'm divided attention. He's thinking about something else.
Okay.
I can chew gum and do that.
Wow.
Well,
oops, run the tape back.
Okay, page 50, unlawful imprisonment.
Terry,
okay, Barry, do you remember what?
Well, you were saying that you thought there was classified too high that unlawful imprisonment.
We don't have unlawful imprisonment in second degree
right,
anymore. Oh, okay, we only have one unlawful imprisonment.
That's right.
Why do you want to take that away from the
penalty? By the way, when I say suggested penalty, I'm not necessarily suggesting it.
Okay, I'm trying to...
You know what I'm saying is that was brought up by some members, so...
Okay, we have kidnapping in the first degree is an A felony, kidnapping in the second degree is a B felony. And then custodial interference is a C
we still got 2 degrees of custodial arrest?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, did we change kidnapping to cover any of the conduct that would have been covered under unlawful imprisonment?
Oh, no,
we
no.
We just
no.
eliminated unlawful imprisonment in the
yes.
second degree because we felt it was covered.
Oh, yeah. Well, the point being that we don't have that crime today, and it probably was, you know. Okay, well, I think seat felony classification is fine there, so.
Tell me what kind of conduct is being covered here.
Okay, somehow get you to walk into this room, I close the door, and I leave you in there for about 2 days, and you're perhaps, exposed to a risk of serious physical injury through starvation. It's very unlikely, it's very difficult to figure out what that covers that's not going to be kidnapping.
Well, what would happen very is quite often happens, the guy decides to hold the maid and 2 or 3 people or his mother-in-law.
That's kidnapping.
No, they hold them in the house.
Good point.
They just say that they don't want the police to arrest them. The police have a warrant for their arrest. And they said, they hold them in the house and more or less it's a
hostage. At gunpoint. Anytime it's deadly physical, anytime it's a threat to use deadly force, it's kidnapping for a 3B8 felony. See, the thing is that it's very difficult to figure out what unlawful.
Here, why don't you go? We'll take the empty.
We've got kidnapping statutes to cover that. You don't have to move anyone to kidnap.
I'll take it back. Yeah, we're holding them as a hostage.
That's it.
Walk in front of you.
Specifically, holding them as a hostage is a first degree offense. I mean, kidnapping the first degree A felony.
Well,
yeah.
This is
a person commits a crime of kidnapping, the first degree, but abducts another person with intent to hold him use him as a hostage. That's an A felony. It's very difficult to think about what first degree, what unlawful imprisonment covers. When you're almost getting to a point, it's saying you don't even need unlawful imprisonment we knock out second degree. If you're going to make unlawful imprisonment an A misdemeanor, you probably don't even need unlawful imprisonment at all, because if you're restraining him under circumstances which expose him to a risk of serious physical injury, it's likely to be viewed as an assault, a reckless endangerment. And a person commits a crime of reckless endangerment if he recklessly engages in conduct which creates a substantial risk of serious physical injury to another person. That's an A misdemeanor.
Yeah.
So you may, instead of declassifying and knock out unlawful imprisonment completely, there is no crime in existing law covering unlawful imprisonment.
All right, let's move on. I was the one that brought it up.
You want to leave it in the code?
Leave it as a C.
Okay, page 57. There's no statute there because you asked me to quote create a super theft provision. I haven't. It's very, in terms of what I would say, it says a person commits the crime of, it would be theft in the first degree, if he commits theft and the value of the property or services is blank or more. What I'm recommending is that, number one, it's a B felony. Number two, that the dollar figure be $50,000. How I got the $50,000 figure is federal criminal code has $100,000. Arizona has $10,000 for a super type of theft. So I picked 50. You may want to use 100. You may want to use less. You want to use more. 50. Anything I think above 50 would be appropriate.
Now, This will be another crime.
In what?
I got you.
Okay. What we'll do is what 4 degrees of theft. The first degree one. It will be super theft. First degree now will be second degree.
So we're gonna have 4 degrees of theft instead of 3.
Yeah.
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 Speaking of Arizona.
Castro.
Terry, if you want to avoid the problem of creating 4 degrees of theft, it's very easy to avoid it.
Put it in first degree.
Yeah, what we say is theft in the first degree is a class C felony unless the value of the property or services is $50,000 or more. In which case, theft in the
first
degree.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. Now we're gonna use what figure you're gonna use. If this is a fairly important decision, so you.
Okay, he started. He said the Fed said 100,000, Arizona has 10.
Yeah, those are the only two I was able to come up with.
I think one thing we should consider is the cost of living in Alaska, you know.
Yeah.
I think 50 is as reasonable as that figure.
Well, Here's the logical way of looking at it. We're at 550,000. I mean, it follows, right? A lot of fines.
It should be 5,000.
No.
It's a B felony, though. It's a pretty serious, you know.
No, that's too weird.
What's weird about it?
30,000 last year.
It's arbitrary.
Yeah, but we don't want to be arbitrary.
Well,
we want to just make it sound
to,
right.
Well, okay, if we don't want to be arbitrary, what we ought to do is look at the court
Let's
records
be capricious.
And find out what kinds of theft crimes we've had and if there's a normal break.
Here's one I would think of. You're getting into all kinds of, organized crime or something, but people stealing D9 cats and off the pipeline, and, pretty criminal. See, if you can aggregate the amount of junk that they steal, so the people that are in the business of stealing furniture and got a whole van load of furniture.
A whole van load of furniture wouldn't come anywhere near $50,000, but a D9 cat might, but...
A whole van load of stereos would.
My feeling on this is that since, number one, the commission felt that all you needed was a C felony theft, since we're creating a B felony, we don't have very many B felonies.
This would be new to existing law.
A new to existing law in the sense of having a felony above the usual. That, $50,000, I think, I only thought $50,000 was too low.
Chairman?
Myself.
Mr. Elias.
Here's our opportunity to go down in history. Why don't we make it something like $49,990.52. Why not? They'll look at that and think, that was those people back and look
yes,
at Jim McCoy way back in 1978. That's great. They had a sense of humor.
Right
they had a sense of humor.
Let's take it at the average price of a 50-foot pitch sink.
Oh, geez.
About 300 grand.
Divided by six.
But does that include in both some of these? Yes, out here, $35,000,
$40,000. A $50,000 boat would be anything over about 30 feet long. I have a 32-foot boat that's worth $60,000.
Does this have to include
so
a resident boat of fish?
If I just had a 30-foot buck seal out here and they spill that,
Transportation
company.
Yeah.
We should.
All right. A motion, please.
Which round?
I made a motion.
What's your motion?
Okay. How about 25?
That's right.
All right. Why don't we make it odd numbers, like 25 odds of $500 or something?
Did you say
that? All right. There's a motion that we have $25,000. Is there any objection to the motion? There's no objection to the motion. It's adopted.
The next one's a page 67, which is when...
Yeah, that's a B felony. Is that okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm. All right.
What's the next one?
Yeah, page 67. Just a couple days ago, we knocked out reckless burning. So the only thing we'll have is criminally negligent burning. It was suggested we raise criminally negligent burning to an A misdemeanor.
We move the amendment. Is there any objection to the amendment?
No. Okay.
Amendment's adopted.
Okay, next one's on page 69. Littering.
We already made that.
Oh, what did you make?
We made a demon.
Oh, okay. Now, what was the culpability requirement? Knowing?
No, recklessly. We kept recklessly.
Recklessly? Okay. Fine.
Oh, wait a minute.
I wasn't sure whether you had voted that on that.
Yes,
we
did.
Mike Miller Memorial Amendment.
We kept it recklessly.
And you knocked out the
It does not immediately remove it. And made it a demon.
Next one's a page 75.
Huh? We've already voted on that.
Yeah. Okay. This is my proposal is this: it stays an A misdemeanor, but it becomes a C felony if the intention of fraud includes an intent to commit another crime or to aid or conceal the commission of another crime.
What's that?
Whoa.
In other words, you're falsifying your business records in order to cover up a theft, for example, or you've done you're getting ready to steal incident to stealing money. You're falsifying business records. So that's what New York, in fact, has done to their...
In other words, for instance, you got a big scam going, they come in and they can't prove that you intended to do it for another, for the purpose of stealing money, they're only going to get you for an A misdemeanor. But if they can't prove that it was part of a big scheme to steal or defraud your boss, then they're going to get you for a C.
Exactly. I think it's a good idea.
So in other words, you have an added element to prove, and then it escalates to a C note.
Yeah, and that's what the special white-collar crime booklet recommends. I think it's a pretty good way to deal with it.
Does this business records include logbooks?
It includes everything.
Logbooks, I hope.
Yeah, anything that is used for the purpose of reflecting a the condition of the activity.
Everybody starts looking at
the whole bunch. Now you understand why the commission had such little penalties for white collar crime.
Okay. All right, is there a motion on the falsifying business record?
So moved.
Is there any objection? Motion carries.
Terry, the next one is commercial bribe, receiving commercial bribery. It was an A misdemeanor. The recommendation is FDSC felony.
Who recommended it?
Well, it seemed that all the testimony we had, at least from the police and from the from Mr. Hickey, was that it should be higher. I thought C felony would be. Since there's no specific prohibition now, I think the C felony classification would be.
Since there is, this isn't presently a crime.
Right, it's not presently a crime.
Well, that's almost the argument to leave it at A.
Well, but then again, you know, the point being that commercial bribery could involve hundreds of thousands of dollars, and an A misdemeanor may be too low. Yeah, I mean, well, like, no, see, Park was involved with bribery of public servants, so he would be treated as a, you know, under general bribery statute. That would be, well, there was also governmental involved, but what it does, you know, I'm a contractor, and I give the person that's awarding the bid $25,000 back.
The Newsweek thing here on the movies.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Okay, somebody want to move that amendment?
Maybe no one was on.
This is run to the amendment. Is there any objection? Amendment's done.
Yeah, the next one is Bill Miles brought, Mr. Miles brought this up, and this was on defrauding secured creditors, fraud and insolvency and judgment creditors, and it was felt that under the code it's just an A misdemeanor. And Bill, you thought that it should be similar to theft. Now, when I wrote this, I said it's an A misdemeanor but a C felony of over 500. What I think now, perhaps, is that you should say it's a C felony of over 25,000. Because I think the kind of conduct you want to get at, it felony penalties with under these business type of statutes, when it's a good deal of money. I think every time you're dealing with this crime, it's going to be over 500 anyway. I think the $25,000 one would be the more appropriate figure.
Well, you're saying, Barry, you're saying that all the cases are going to end up being over 500 anyway, so that if we did this, they'd all be C felonies.
That's right.
There really wouldn't be any aim.
That's correct. That is exactly correct. I think it's 25. You said a C felony of over 25,000.
Well, isn't that inconsistent with our theft provision?
Well,
what we're talking about is another form of theft.
Not necessarily.
Well, in essence, I mean, without making the fine legal distinction in poor man's talk, we're talking about robbing,
smart stealing.
Well, no, I disagree. I disagree because number one, you do have specific civil type of approach, civil type of remedy. Secondly, it doesn't require that you actually be successful. For example, if you look at fraud and insolvency, you'll see that under A1. Yes, it does. You have to obtain the property, and then you go for attempted theft. Whereas under like A3 of fraud and insolvency, you're guilty of the crime if you present to any creditor a writing or record reflecting the debtor's estate, knowing that it contains a false statement. You know?
Yeah, but that's only misdemeanor.
Okay, because there it wasn't, if you didn't obtain.
It seems to me that for the serious violations, we should take it in line with what we've got for theft. And if it's a C felony over $500, then maybe it should be a B felony for over $25,000. And that brings it in line with the secret theft.
Right. I'm trying to agree.
Well, just in terms of being, devil's advocate here. There was, again, Mr. Brown at least felt that you shouldn't even have statutes like this in the criminal code. Secondly, at least on the commission level, it was fairly close to whether you're going to contain these statutes at all. Two of the statutes criminalize conduct that is not criminal under existing law. And I'm somewhat concerned about authorizing, say, a B felony penalty for something that's not criminal under existing law and making it a B felony under the code.
I guess it would be under $500 as an A misdemeanor, a C felony if it's between $500 and $25,000, and a B felony if it's over $25,000. That's consistent, is it, Barry?
Yes, so, yeah, you're saying just make it consistent with that,
that's
right.
Good.
I don't know. I'm just
And you see, you could work it with defrauding secured creditors and judgment creditors, but I don't think you could do it with fraud and insolvency when I'm really looking at that. Because, okay, judgment creditors and secured creditors, you're talking about specific property. So you could say if the property involved is over $50,000. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about fraud and insolvency, only subsection A1 deals with, I believe, the property. Subsections 2, 3, and 4, are difficult to parallel with the judgment creditors and secured creditors there. You might take a time just to look at it. How do you tie it in? Do you tie it to the estate or do you tie it in?
Well, those would only be misdemeanors as I read them.
Because you couldn't prove amount.
Because you're not talking about an amount.
Well,
I mean, if you present a phony document.
Tell me that if I conceal property, say I'm trying to defraud my judgment creditors, and I have a $50,000 ring, say, and I conceal it, I hide it somewhere in my house, I put it in a safe deposit box. Under your amendment, I would be guilty of a B felony simply for doing that. And,
Even though
I may not have been successful, and even though similarly they might have recovered it. See, it doesn't require that I actually...
There is a problem here, okay? Because it's not really theft in parallel, because in the theft, you know, how much did I take from Bill Mott? So, Bill, just start reading. Start with the first one here, defrauding secured creditors. A person commits a crime of defrauding secured creditors knowingly that the property is subject, he intentionally fails to disclose that interest to a buyer of the property. It's hard to tack down how much did I defraud you of.
You may not have defrauded of anything. You may
that's what lawyers are for.
Well, no. See, here's the problem is that in some cases we will be able to say that because of my action I defrauded you of $750. Mm-hmm. But in other cases you're not going to be able to say what was the amount. And, you know, the only way I can see approaching it is to change how these crimes are written into saying that if you did defraud somebody of the result of committing this crime was to defraud you of a certain amount, then you'd be guilty. But if you did that, then you're going to come under theft anyway.
That's not necessarily true.
If you actually defrauded somebody?
Well, because, you see, the thing is that property is subject to a security interest. It's just not subject to theft. It's not viewed in the same way.
That's a problem because some of this we will be able to, the nature of the offenses will result in actual defrauding or
a loss. Fine, let's put that penalty down there. If you can't, if it's impossible to for some reason.
Then it stays in Amos
community.
Okay, let me see. I'll come back and I'll just work on that. That's right. Okay, I'll do it so that if you actually defraud the person.
What does it say, Dad?
That's a suggestion.
Yeah, if you actually defraud the person, it'll be subject to theft penalties.
In other words, and if it's committing one of these crimes results in a provable defrauding of X amount, then it should be true. But
I think that approach would nail it down.
Yeah, I might be able to consolidate these all into one statute and see what happens. Okay,
let's leave that one open.
Page 93, Mr. Dankworth brought up the issue of perjury and felt that it should be treated more seriously. I assume it'd be a felony. This is a very interesting provision, since in the original draft this was an A felony, that was ridiculous. And
what's your perjury under existing law?
I think it's a maximum of, I think,
10 years. Right?
No, I think sometimes it goes size 10, actually. It depends on the proceeding. Then we brought it back to the commission to have a revote. We recommended they do it a B felony, then they ended up voting for C felony. I think the C felony classification is defensible, but I can understand why some may want to make it a size of B felony.
The thing is that existing statute has two perjury provisions. Existing law has two perjury provisions.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Who's going to be the new chairman?
Well, it depends on whether the crime was a 3, I think. Actually, I'll quote from my article.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Ed.
I thought you were
going to
say that one for me.
Well, I saved
you.
Thanks, Dick.
That's very nice.
This is interesting.
Go ahead, Doug. Bob, get some calories.
I had some breakfast.
You let him
Load it up on the calories. I just need the fuel to keep me going through the day.
See, the problem is, Ed, I know what you're saying about this being a serious crime, but the thing is, it doesn't require materiality. In other words, it could be, you know, simply about it, about any statement. Whereas most states do require some type of materiality requirement.
All of that.
What was that?
What the hell was that?
Are we on perjury or what?
Yeah, I think perjury, you know. It's with amendment.
Basically, it's 3 to 10.
Okay, existing crimes, 3 to 10.
Essentially, yeah.
3 to 10.
3 to 10 in crimes. 3 to 10 in crimes. Three to 10 in, wait, just wait. 3 to 10 in crimes. When defined civil. We don't distinguish.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know what Mr. Dankler's driving at. I tell you, it's perjury is something that happens all the time, especially in criminal cases. You know, and I withdrew from a murder case one time because I refused to put my client on the stand because I knew he was going to perjure himself. The next attorney came along and didn't think anything about it. And, you know, put his client on the stand, let him lie through his teeth. See? So it's, there's a, you know, whether you can cure that to by making it more harsh penalty, I don't know. But it is a recurring problem. And people are always just insulting the integrity of the judicial process by getting on the stand and lying. Now, I think our perjury statute covers more than just being on the stand, but I think if a person lies in court, on the stand, under oath, I think that, Yeah, well, it is our whole judicial system. Somebody can go up there and start the truth and there's no real crime to it. Have you ever been to jail? How often are amendments? People, how many? Not very often. The most famous case is a guy named Nelson, and he started out with me as his defense attorney. Patting girls on the ass, and he got on the stand and said
that he never did it.
And what it shows you the difference in the prosecutors in the state too is Harry Davis is the only prosecutor who had enough, you know, interest in it to prosecute the guy afterwards for perjury, which was a felony. So the guy started out with a misdemeanor charge against him, and he was in jail for 2 years on a felony perjury. What had happened? But see, that happens all the time. I mean, that's. I probably, when I was in criminal courts every day, I saw perjury all the time, and I've only seen the prosecutor a couple of times. Maybe if you, I don't know whether the executive would look at the policy decision by the legislature and make it a few felony and decide if they would prosecute it more. I think
it's pretty efficient. I think it'd be the existing penalty is equivalent to a felony.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. 3 to 10 existing.
I believe that.
No objection amendments at page 116. Possession of gambling devices.
What's the penalty for violation now? $300.
Okay, that's not good.
Harry, have we taken care of antique slots?
Yeah, you see, and that's, I think, the reason, is originally as it was drafted, it said if you had a slot machine, regardless of whether it was an antique or whether you wanted to use it on lawful gambling, it would be an offense. But we've made it so that you have to possess it with reckless disregard that it's going to be used in a lawful gambling. So the violation penalty we have for it may not be high enough. Maybe it'd be misdemeanor would be sufficient. I just think that the violation category may be inappropriate there. Because you may have a situation where you raid a place and after hours joined, the easiest thing to prosecute for would be possession of the tables. Well, here we only make a violation.
Well, in the possession of these, I have a slot machine at home. That's great, you know, and we want, I don't see anything wrong with that, but I don't think this spells that out that well.
No, it's taken care of, it's been amended.
Well, but what if I, is it amended to the fact that if Terry is going to throw a party tonight, he wants to borrow my slot machine?
Yes.
Can he take it over to his house and go get one from Bill and have a pretty good social gathering?
That's fine. That's not illegal.
I just wonder if it shouldn't be, though.
Well,
I can see protecting the guy for a cat, you know, if I want to have one in my home, and it's in, under the control of the owner at all times. But to start these things in circulation and loaning them to these after-hours joints.
Well, that's different. The after-hours joint, that's different. But you gave me an example of Terry having a party in his house, you know, and the only issue is
if I start profiting from them,
then obviously you're going to be getting a penance.
Got it. If I've just got it there to entertain you.
Exactly. Well, the only issue really is, do you think that the penalty is adequate in violation?
Does this go to the Elks Club and the Roots Club? If they want to possess several machines down there strictly for social purpose,
they have to pay up.
They probably have one of those permits.
They have to pay up.
You can't get a permit for that. that the permits aren't issued for the gate, it's still a fence, and that doesn't say that it doesn't have a gate.
No, it's gotta be in your home. It's gotta be in your home.
It doesn't say that.
Yeah, it doesn't even.
Unlock, yes, that's correct.
What does it say? Do you have a change?
Well, what it says on line 15, well, what we do is you simply knock out number 2, okay, line 19. By the way, this recommendation is my own. No one has requested it, this one. This is simply my own, okay. And maybe it's in, you know, you don't even have to discuss it.
Well, I'm not interested in that so much as I'm having a problem with what your recommendation is, but I'm talking about the law itself while I'm on this. I wanted to make sure that we didn't unnecessarily open up all these, the clothing club and the Elks club.
No, you didn't. That's, if it's going to be used anywhere but the house, it is not, it's criminal.
Does it say so? In
yes.
Okay. So you say it does?
Yes.
What's next, members?
Now, the other day you wanted to open it up to protect your buddies. The other day you had some Fred Chai or something you wanted to cover.
Oh, Fred Chai says I collect them. I have them in my home. I hope you guys don't outlaw so the police come and go. I don't mind it at home as long as this guy had it at home.
When are you trying to protect somebody? When are you trying to get
somebody?
Yeah,
I don't want
to.
Terry, that's
local
it.
Clubs. What's
Terry?
Does
anybody
want to change their plans to leave the money in the,
Can the amendments been moved?
Is that all?
Is there any objection to the amendment?
Don't you object to the amendment?
Yeah, I object to it.
Okay. What's the nature of your objection, Mr. Wright?
I don't think it wasn't brought before us. You know, Terry just grabbed it out of the sky.
Well, the reason I brought it out of the sky was because the decision to make it a violation was because of the fact we prohibited possession of all slot machines, regardless of whether it was, you know, an antique or not. So we changed that. You know, we said it has to be unlawful.
Wait a minute.
No.
You say that.
That's
not it now.
That's how it used to be, right?
That's how it used to be. Don't get that excited.
Well, if Ed really wants to look at it, he ought to look up the amendment, which is number one.
Okay. That's one. I don't know. But
wait,
there's amendment before us. Is there any further discussion?
Thanks, Chairman. Possession of gamma bites, I don't think is in the same category as criminally negligent burning, for instance.
I withdraw my amendment.
You can't. Somebody moved your amendment. Dankworth moved the amendment.
I moved it. I hope we differ on this one. As long as it's social.
All those in favor of the amendment, raise your right hand. All those opposed, at the same time.
You damn official.
Amendment carries.
Carry?
Yeah. How did you vote, Perry? Ms. Brown?
Well, I actually think it should be. I think it's fine. The thing is what? The reason you wanted it to be a crime is because
of your
voice. Sorry, now just a minute. Hold on, let's don't bolt here.
No, that's because
weapons.
Weapons. Yeah. We're just, we're nibbling away at our...
Well, Jim McKenzie, we're in for a treat.
Right. We're in for a
treat.
But Jim McKenzie's going to come down and explain weapons. Is this the last thing?
Oh, this is the last one.
Okay.
He's coming down.
Before Jim comes down... Okay, before Jim comes down, there's one thing on weapons I have to ask. Okay, we have a statute now that says it's a crime to possess prohibited weapons. Prohibited weapons include, sort of shotgun, metal knuckles, submachine guns, let me give you all of them. Switchblades, hand grenades, exactly. Gravity knives, that's basically it. Now the question is, should that be subject to forfeiture?
Should that be subject to forfeiture?
Well, all right.
Is it a curse?
Well, no, it isn't, unless we specifically provide.
No, what would be the arguments against it?
I don't think there are any.
Then I will say with more force.
Of course.
You mean they can take it away?
Which would be done?
You can forfeit it?
Yeah.
Without compensation? Wait.
We're talking about those submachine guns.
That's a souvenir or something from the...
Well, as long as it's registered.
Well, sometimes you come send them and they test these machines, kill half a dozen guys, you don't even want to give it away. The war days?
Oh, I thought you just meant killing other fishermen.
Oh, I think under the Federal Registration Act, where you can't register those, you have to put them in such a condition that they're not able to fire.
Right. I sunk 42 purse seiners with a bazooka, and I'm not going to have a gold plate.
Thank you.
or the railroad six.
Oh, boy, they take pride in shooting.
Some of these automatic rifles.
Explosions are not just gas.
They sell them. They sell them out of the gun stores now. You know, you can buy the army automatic AR-15s.
Oh yeah, right.
Is there any motion? Okay.
Sure. No, Jim is coming down to do the second degree. Jim, the first degree, there were no changes on there. Okay, so second degree is where you start.
Are we all through the criminal court now?
No.
All right.
We're going to vote on Monday, aren't we?
Okay.
All right, I need to have something in front of you.
We're on. What's the next amendment?
We're
going to
vote against the next
Okay, this amendment.
After all this work, we're going to tube it. Hey, Charlie, we finally got the work.
We switched over to three. Okay. Let's go back to order. All right, this is Amendment Delta.
Yeah, Jim is going to handle the only provision here that is really changed. But what this reflects, one and two, of course, stayed the same. Three was redrafted, four was redrafted. Five, you adopted the amendment that said, it originally said along and existing law says across, which you felt that it should be. But six is the real difficult one. And Jim has worked out a way to deal with six in terms of defenses. Jim can handle that.
Okay, I think some of you can attest that whenever you get involved with local government, you start getting confused. Fairly confused. In 6 it says, it makes it a crime to flourish, point, or discharge a firearm in a city of any class or at a public place. So let's focus just on the city part of it. First of all, there's some question about what city means. Juneau is not a city. Juneau is a unified municipality that goes all the way to Skagway, practically. And Anchorage is also a unified municipality, and I'm not sure of its area. So in subsection C, I have defined the term city to exclude a unified municipality. I could just as easily define it to include a unified municipality, if that's what you want to do. But I do think you need to address that question. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or let me go through the whole thing.
Okay, let's just take more of your time.
Okay.
Mrs. Redman.
The intention was to exclude boroughs, then, I take it.
Jim, boroughs are excluded. There isn't any problem with boroughs. It's where you have a unified municipality that is neither a borough or a city.
No, but I'm saying your intention was to exclude boroughs. Make it legal to flourish, point, or discharge firearm in a borough.
That would not be prohibited as such. No, it might be prohibited by the public place part of 6, depending on where you get it in the borough.
You're correct.
Yeah. Okay. That was a decision of the commission.
Well, the existing law says city, and 661 says city, and we never been told to do it.
There was no intention to include borough.
Mr. Chairman, what about the situation where you got a village that's not organized, an unincorporated village within a borough or within a unified municipality? The one that comes to my mind is Hope, where I spend a lot of time.
It would not be covered by this.
It would not. In other words, a guy can blaze away all he wants, and it would not be a...
Assuming the absence of local prohibitions.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If it's not an organized municipality, they don't have the power to...
Borough, however, the borough may make laws for the villages within it.
Yeah, which they never do, though. Yeah. It's a practical matter. But you are precluding that situation.
Yeah. Unless it's a public place. There is a separate, and believe me, I think there are problems with this, but Barry gets to deal with this. If you discharge, flourish, or point a firearm at a public place, it doesn't have to be in a city.
Question on unified municipality is twofold. The first one is that I assume that the interest in prohibiting flourishing, planting, or discharging in a city is fairly well populated, and it's just not a good idea to let people do that in a city. But some of the unified municipalities are fairly populated and others aren't. Juneau, the city of Juneau is quite large, and there are large areas, aren't there, that aren't very populated.
We didn't
exclude unified municipality, everybody that goes hooter hunting in Juneau would be guilty of the offense.
Well, we have a separate defense based on, that's in B3 there on the second page, I shouldn't say B3 necessarily, but there are defenses provided in subsection B designed to cover the situation where someone is lawfully hunting.
Okay, but for instance, you know, you go out and you just want to target practice in the woods.
In a city?
Yeah, well, if we didn't do what you have done here and exclude it, I couldn't go out and target practice at Eagle Beach or, you know, or a lot of places.
Yes.
Right, if we did not
The city specifically authorizes it. Right. Frankly, Gary and I agree on this in rare areas, that you don't really need six at all. The conduct, a lot of this conduct would probably fall under reckless endangerment or assault. Some of it wouldn't, like walking down the street twirling an unloaded pistol would probably not fall under reckless endangerment or assault. Seems to me, and this is a policy matter, that could certainly be left up to the city to make criminal if it wished.
Yeah, I mean,
that just varies in my opinion.
The point being is that perhaps, considering all the different examples we're talking about, unified municipalities, can you do it on the beach, maybe this is more appropriately a subject for local regulation, and that ACID should not be included. If it's going to be discharging the firearm anywhere, and it recklessly places someone in danger, it's treated already.
To me, I think that that's the one conclusion I came up with listening to the whole thing in Fairbanks. Trying to put arbitrary limits about you can't use it in the city or anything was the wrong way to approach it. The only way to approach it was how you use the gun. If you use it recklessly, I don't care where you are, then it ought to be a crime. Because you got Doug's point about, well, it's an unincorporated city. Well, if he uses it recklessly in hope, it ought to be a crime. It shouldn't be dependent on some jurisdictional boundaries or something. It's how you use the gun that makes it a crime.
Well, I was wondering, following up on your suggestion, we could eliminate six along with subsection B?
Yeah.
Yes, if you automatically eliminate the rest, everything
except
from line 26 on page 1 through line 13 on page 2.
Okay. What situation would be in then? Would we have
the situation would be is that unless you could argue it was an assault or it was a reckless endangerment situation, it would not be prohibited by state law. You would simply leave it up to the local governmental unit to regulate it.
Okay. What's reckless endangerment?
Reckless endangerment is engaging in conduct that recklessly creates a substantial risk of serious physical injury to any person.
Okay. I mean, if you start firing a gun around houses, that's reckless endangerment, or even if there's only one house.
Now,
you shoot across the highway.
Well, we got highway covered.
You know, or a playground. Let's say you go down into here to the base and it's a playground. You want to target practice down there, that's going to be reckless endangerment.
I think what this was aimed at is the clown kind of a person who likes to twirl guns and stuff. You know, I think that's probably mainly what's happened. Seems to me to be a fairly minor kind of offense, and it could be left to local jurisdiction. Now, you do have the problem is that the legislature is the assembly for the unorganized borough. In other words, when you're talking about the unorganized borough, if you're not in a city there, there isn't going to be a local body having jurisdiction, but it seems to me you might well address that in a separate bill under your specific power to legislate for the unorganized borough.
Yeah. Well, I have a problem. See, I agree with what you're saying, but I don't see that in the bill. If I understand what you're saying, in the past, we've had a law that says first it wants to discharge the firearm in a reckless and so on manner that don't in the law now.
Well, no, it's pretty similar exactly like this, Matt. Here.
It says city.
Yeah, it says specifically city at a public place.
I don't know about being in the city, but it seems like to me if we limit it to anybody who furnishes to discharge a firearm in such a way as in a reasonable or a reckless manner that could cause physical harm to a person or property, and just let that go for the whole
thing. Let's get exactly what you just said, and let's write that down. Say it again.
Oh, Lord.
He recklessly flourishes points or discharges a firearm in a city that creates a risk.
Anyone who flourishes points or discharges a firearm in a reckless manner with disregard for property or life or could cause serious injury to persons or property, and just kind of let it be the definition.
That gets a cowboy that comes down from Anchorage and steps out in front of my place and hope starts blazing away at tin cans, you know.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, trying to draft it right here. Flores's point of discharges a firearm in a manner with reckless disregard to property damage or physical injury to any person, something like that.
That's right.
You're not going to cover the case of an unloaded firearm unit, which may be desirable.
That's right.
You may wish not to cover that, but that's what would fall out of it if you...
I think that's appropriate because what we're doing is we're going to be criminalizing certain kinds of conduct in one area that wouldn't be in another. I mean, if in this sense, if we have reckless endangerment, you know, and it's by, you know, badly driving the car, then, you know, what's the corollary of the unloaded gun? It's going slow, you know, in a car. You see,
driving backwards, I would say, would be something in the corollary. You know, being a real clown about it and putting it, making people
If we're going to cover unloaded guns, you know, then we probably should cover other conduct in other areas. It's
a car behaving outrageously.
But it's not really dangerous. It's outrageous, but not dangerous.
You know, people don't like to see folks twirling guns down the street.
Yeah.
I guess that's what
some people don't like a guy on a ski slope coming bombing down at 100 miles an hour through the crowd. It scares people. You know, the beginning skier is the same kind of thing. But he knows what he's doing, so it's really not dangerous.
Okay,
but everybody else is scared.
I know we'll have to kind of refine it, but what I got now is something to this effect. Flores's point to discharge a firearm with reckless disregard for the risk of damage to property or the risk of physical injury to any person.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean,
is that different from reckless
endangerment? Well, okay, it does. It does in such substantial ways. In order to be guilty of reckless endangerment, you have to create a substantial risk of serious physical injury.
So you're only going physical injury.
And we're also talking about not a substantial risk, we're talking about a risk. And number three, we're covering property damage. In other words, shooting, you know, at someone's, and someone's discharging a firearm and hitting someone's house, for example, that's the damage to property. Does that sound all right? We'll come back, obviously, with it.
I like that a lot.
I think it's a much better
approach.
And I think that that's the kind of thing that all the gun thieves are, that you can make a valid argument about, because I'm not saying don't use guns, I'm just saying if you're going to use guns, use them properly.
I think we got one more question.
Okay. Would somebody move that amendment?
Yeah.
I move that amendment.
Mr. Miles has moved the new subsection 6
and
to have the effect of deleting all of line 26 down through line 13 on page 2. Substituting the new subsection 6.
Right.
Okay, is there any objection to that motion? No objection to any stuff. Are we all done with this now?
Well, if you want to look at the formality.
I'll move Delta.
Okay, well, let's hold it while Jim's looking at it. See if we need to do anything else.
I meant less one in the sense that there's one more.
In the sense that there was, I hope there's some kind of law we're writing here. Some liar can say, well, I said one part, but I really meant the sense too.
Okay.
We get that picture.
Okay, here's the last one. I swear. Terry, if we get this done, we go.
Okay. This is third degree.
Terry, you want to formally
move
that?
I don't have anything further on the other one. This is
okay. I move Delta. Amendment Delta has revised. Is there any objection? Amendment stuff.
Is this Ada?
Zeta. This is amendment. Zeta. Z E T A. Okay.
Jim, are you going to explain this?
Barry, you want me to go in third degree or you?
Well, okay, let me just, I'll give you this. Jim has redrafted one and two and will explain it. Four reflects the decision not to include, I'm sorry, just to make it from 16 to 8, from 18. Jim, where's that section on concealed in the dwelling?
That's number, or subsection B.
Okay, fine. Okay, then there are no other changes. But I guess the rewriting here has been on 1 and 2, and Jim could explain the effect of that.
Well, in Maine, I think you ought to read this first, but let me just point out one thing that's really crucial. There is a difference in the way this is drafted between a weapon's being concealed and a weapon's being in arm's reach. In order to violate A1 or A2, the weapon must be concealed and must also be within arm's reach. And if you start confusing those concepts, you get into a lot of trouble, so I'm trying to keep them distinct. So anyway, I suggest you read the whole thing, but you might want to start with subsection D, where it says when a weapon is going to be concealed if it's on a person in D1, and when a weapon is going to be concealed if it's in a propelled vehicle in D2. But remember, whether it's concealed or not has nothing to do with whether it's in arm's reach.
You did a pretty good job over there.
Well, you helped a lot in there, didn't you? Helped straighten my mind out.
Somebody coming in off a long run or coming off hunting trip, I had a pistol theft on me, going in, say, for instance, going in a liquor store and buying a bottle of rum. Taking a hunting trip.
If it's obvious that you have a weapon, then it isn't concealed.
Well, but it's still a possessive.
Which subsection are you talking about?
A3.
It has to be for consumption on the premises, so if you go to a liquor store, that wouldn't be covered. It's like any bar, I guess.
I'll tell you nowadays, Makers, you better not walk into a liquor store with a weapon on to take a seat.
It came worse.
Oh, yes, old gal up there had that too.
What about this other guy that went in naked?
Oh, yeah. Rocker with a smile. That guy deserved to get away.
Well, it's unfortunate that we have to make laws.
No,
that really affects us in our parts of the state. We don't have a problem. The cover anchorage is a problem.
Lisa, can you explain this? The thing I couldn't understand is that I was just certain, without even knowing, in my own mind, if a woman had walked in, that the man would not have run out.
I know.
And that's kind of a statement of what's the problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although maybe he would have.
Right, depends what you look like.
Yeah, but I should have been way around.
Probably would have two challenges.
It seems that it seems awkward in the sense you're saying it's concealed if you cannot do certain things.
Well, the idea is you don't want a weapon lying on a seat to be considered concealed, even though a policeman or someone couldn't see it without turning on his flashlight. So the thing is, it not only has to be covered or enclosed, which it is by the car itself, but it has to be covered or enclosed in such a manner that the only way to see it is either to open the door, enter the vehicle, remove the weapon, or lift something off the weapon. If you can see it by just shining a flashlight on it, it's not concealed.
Well, wait a minute, what if the doors are locked?
You can shine your flashlight through the window.
It doesn't say that. It says, without opening the door, if any of them fell in, you can't open the door.
No, you cannot determine that it is a weapon without opening the door.
the mere fact that you can't open the door doesn't make it concealed or otherwise.
If you have a hunting knife in the glass,
just very hard.
Well, that's the next issue.
It's just very hard to read that.
That's
just
that.
Well, that's what we're doing.
It's probably just me.
It's some like sophisticated concept. I mean, so it's one of these areas, it seems to me, where it's inherently complicated, and it's with. I would find it a real challenge to make it any simpler than a hand.
Okay.
Well,
what
do
you do with it?
I'm having a party for Herb Pearson. If anybody wants to come, I'm certainly welcome.
Well, Dick just brought up the question of the knife and the knife in the glove compartment. We had discussed
first
this.
First of all, is everybody done reading it?
Cheap thing. Cheap
thing.
That's a cheap.
Are you finished reading the compartment?
Yeah. No, I said you're cheap to have to a party because you don't drink.
Oh, I got you.
Okay, I guess
I'd like to explain one thing that I think is very important. Here's a hypothetical. A person is sitting in the driver's seat of the car and has a weapon in the glove compartment. As I read the statute, that is a concealed weapon within arm's reach. Now, Barry and I were talking yesterday, you might want us to draft something that would make it a defense that the weapon was in a locked container, even if it is concealed and within arm's reach. If it's in a locked container, like a locked glove compartment, perhaps you would want to exclude that from the statute. I think it's included the way it is now.
What if we just specified a firearm?
I think that would be a super idea myself. I've never understood why you wanted to apply it to deadly weapons anyway. A tire arm under the seat conceivably could be a deadly weapon.
No, it's not correct. That's not correct. A deadly weapon is anything specifically designed for causing death. The tire arm.
It has to be specifically designed?
Yes. That's the definition.
Guns aren't designed necessarily to cause death. They can do it.
How about
use it for other things too.
It specifically includes firearms. A knife would be a deadly weapon.
I think there's a big difference between having a pistol concealed in a